You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This is a podcast from ComediansComedian.com.
This is the Comedians Comedian Podcast.
Hello there and welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith, and you may even be able to hear in the background the incredible blustery wind and rain that has been hammering Edinburgh for the last few days. This is the first of this year's Edinburgh Fringe live podcast, recorded at Bob and Misbehave's bookshop at 5 Holyrood Road as part of their Heroes of Fringe is probably the quickest way of saying that. You can go to heroesoffringe.com and see everyone else that's on there. And I will tell you a little bit more about the forthcoming podcasts which will be at that venue in just a moment. But first, here's Sam Simmons.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Help yourself to a very, very high stool.
Yeah.
And some unopened water.
Lovely.
Oh,
lovely.
Yeah.
Lovely.
So can we just, in fact, shall I ask who here has seen you? Can I just have a show of hands if you've seen Sam's stuff? Brilliant. Okay, so about half the room, which if you're listening at home, has got well over 1,000 people in it. For the benefit of those people who haven't seen you before, in fact, let's just tell us, we started having this conversation before the show. Let's have it now. How was tonight?
Good night tonight.
You said when you came in, you were like, Okay, it's good, I'm happy to talk about
I'm
it.
Yeah, I'm in a good mood, well. So it's all right. Like, last two nights, not so good, weird. And it's not like being like a weird like Friday, Saturday night audience thing, but you were there, you saw. You got through it, though, you liked it, yeah? Yeah.
Yeah. That's
true. I actually thought Friday night was even worse than that. But I thought last night was kind of okay. No? Jeez. All right.
For the benefit of the listener, the guy just did the wiggly hand gesture. That means, don't know about that, Sam. So for the people here who don't know, or the people listening who don't know, how would you describe the stuff that you do? Because it's very unusual. It's certainly not straight stand-up.
Yeah, no. I mean, look, it gets labelled as being, like, surreal or absurd, which, you know, I just think it's funny. But anyway, that's just me. But it gets labelled like that it's kind of, like, quite odd and you can't get your head around it. But, fuck, I mean, it's also subjective, isn't it? Like, you know, I go off and see stand-up and just go, no, thank you, not me. And then I'm watching people just roaring with laughter around me. I'm just like, fuck, yeah. I'm so bored. But, yeah.
So just describe what it is. If it isn't stand-up to someone here that's never seen it before.
Just a guy being weird on a stage for an hour. And it is. It just is that. But there's thought behind it. It's not like I'm just randomly out there just shouting out like a watermelon monkey purple dishwasher bullshit. It's just, it's weird. It seems like it's weird, but it's all netted together in a way. It's not performance art. Fuck that. It's my own brew. I only say brew because I saw the word brew up there. But
it's
my own
comedy
thing. Yeah, yeah. It's just being a dickhead on stage. It's not puerile, but it's childish. It's innocent. It's innocent comedy. It's joyous, as opposed to other things.
Yeah, go on. But finish that thought. As opposed to what would you suggest?
Well, I guess nasty stuff, or I mean, there's certain comedy I'll go off and see. And I mean, fuck, this will turn into me just slagging off other comedians, and I don't want to do
Brilliant.
That.
Brilliant. I think I speak for everyone here when I say yay. Yeah, right. No.
Well, look, it comes from a very silly place, and silly, like coming from Australia and being a silly comedian it's a hard thing to do because Australia is pretty. Any Australians in, by the way? Okay, right. You know, it's hard. It's hard being an Australian. It's hard being a weird guy or an effeminate kind of guy in Australia as well. It's like, fuck off, faggot. Just get off. What are you doing? Why are you doing that? It's weird. And I come over here and I think there's a... You're allowed to be weird and absurd, like, over here, but maybe not being an Australian. Like, they can't get their heads around it sometime. But they'll go off and bloody watch Paul Foot talk about bananas and pears and go, yeah, I get it. It's like, really? Why can't I do that? But anyway, yeah. But people are coming, which is lovely. But I guess, and I'm not saying off Paul Foot. I like Paul Foot. Anyway, you know what I mean? Like performing that type of stuff in like pubs and clubs around Australia really hardens you in terms of like doing something like slightly effeminate. I think people get offended by silly stuff in a way, like because they can't understand it.
When we're talking about silly stuff here, just to paint a picture, your current show, it's called Death of a Salesman, and you're a windsurfer, so you're wearing a sort of neoprene wetsuit and you're standing on a windsurfing
windsail.
Thank you. Yep. And you're standing on one of them, you've got two bum bags, and throughout the show there's a space nan, there are sharks.
That's a subtle... story about death.
Yeah, of course. There's a...
It's not just there for a random reason. It's there for a point, purpose, a motive, evocative.
And you drink from a moist towelette by squeezing it.
Yeah, that's
above.
Awesome. That's
it is awesome.
Yeah,
that's
it
incredible.
Is. And it's over the top of Pantera. It's just like really, really hardcore, like 90s death metal. And I'm just like wringing out a moist towelette in my mouth. Because that show, and the thing is about that show, a lot of people are just like, nah, it's so random. It's like, fuck off. Yeah. No, it's not. Like, everything in that is completely based in some type of reality. If you were swept out to sea and you had nothing to drink, you'd drink your moist towelette. If you had one on you, you'd go for it. You'd eat your chapstick. It makes sense. And, like, you know, you'd revert to cannibalism at some point. You'd start talking to yourself. It's actually grounded in such reality, that show.
Yeah. So we'll definitely come back to this point about what's... I believe you. We'll definitely come back to this point about what's sense and nonsense and the difference between what you're doing and, as you said, the you know, inverted commas, surreal stuff of the, you know, purple dishwasher.
Annoying.
You know, annoying, if you will.
Monkey cheese and teeth, it's called, I think. Is that a thing?
Monkey cheese and teeth, is
comedy.
That?
Is it not called that here?
Yeah, oh, right. Yeah, it
monkey
is now.
Monkey cheese and teeth comedy.
Yeah, sweet. Okay, so we'll come back to that, but I just want to look at how you started. Is this the sort of work you were making when you first started out as a comic?
Yeah, it's always been weird. I've never been able to be relatable in any way. I cannot do relatable stand-up whatsoever. There's no.
And how do you know that you can't do it? Have you ever tried?
I tried it. It was terrible. And a guy, one of my favourite comedians, anyone know Mike Wilmot?
Yeah.
Right. Mike Wilmot and I are the oddest of friends. Like, we are the opposite of each other. Mm-hmm. He's just a great, amazing, stoic, filthy stand-up. And me doing my cheese and teeth shit. Anyway, he really, really, he loves what I do and he just thinks, stick to your guns. And I tried doing, there's a thing called the Road Show in Australia, which is where you travel around to regional cities internally and throughout Australia playing to nanas in theatres. And you've got to put on your best 20 minutes kind of thing. Like, it's a big deal, this kind of, like, this roadshow tour. And so I had moments of just dying on stage in front of nanas rurally everywhere. And so I thought I had to change stuff, so I started trying to do relatable stand-up. And it was fine. Like, you know, people were kind of getting it. But
what kind of stuff are you doing? When you say relatable, what sort of topics?
Just about my day and what's going on in that, like, small little town. Like, oh, you got a giant sheep here. That's bloody weird, isn't it? Oh, I love sheep. Bloody, I'll eat lamb. I don't know. Anyway, it was relatable in a way.
Yeah,
you know what
okay.
I mean? And Mike just said, that's just terrible. Just do what you do. Just be weird, you fucking weirdo. And I really took that on. Like, he really bullied me into it. And he was right. I stuck to my guns and I changed my thought. Then I wasn't trying to, like, please, like, a massive audience. Because I know I'll find, like, my pockets of an audience everywhere I go kind of thing. So I kind of just stuck to my guns and did my thing. And, yeah, he inspired a bit of that because he's insightful.
So what was the first set that you ever did when you were doing, like, what, were you doing sort of fives or tens when you first started?
Yeah, I was doing a bit of parody. Parody songs, you know what that is, like Weird Al, but shitter.
Existing tunes and changing the words kind of thing.
Yeah, okay. Some terrible stuff. And then I evolved that into just being weirder and weirder on stage. And I think, I mean, there was always, like, I used, like, pictures and cartoons and flip charts and all that type of props, basically, which I know that doesn't get a lot of chops here, but props. I was a prop comic and I still am. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so, yeah, it was always looked at as being quite weird, but it just slowly started to change and the comedy landscape became a bit more alternative. And I look, you know, great stand-up is fucking fantastic. When I see it, I just wish I could do that, but I can't do it. I delve in the world of fantasy. I don't talk about anything that's personal in my life ever, really, apart from how the gig's going.
Okay, that is that. I mean, that's definitely a thing that there is a parallel line. You often comment on yourself, whether it's you live commenting on how it's going.
Well, there's nothing worse than like having a... Because I know at certain points when I'm on stage, I'm doing something very fucking funny. Like, there's a part in my show... You would have seen it last night. There was a bit last night where I'm on stage and I'm okay, so basically I've been swept out to sea and I start talking to myself and I'm battling to get control of my body because the internal voice in my body is having a conversation with me. I start fighting myself over 50 Cent's, I think it's called It's Your Birthday. It's Your Birthday. Anyway, so I start wrestling and fighting myself and I've got my hand up my ass and I'm like wrestling myself and he just like, I look out to the audience just like, nah. Like just like, I was like, fuck, there's nothing funnier than a man wrestling himself on stage with his hand up his ass to 50 Cent. Like, what is wrong with you people? And I challenged them. So or the next bit's like where I'm trying to bang open a coconut to Kanye.
Yeah.
And it's like just a sea of apathy. And it's like, fuck off. Just like, I'd rather you heckled than just sat there in silence. You boring fucks. Like, there is nothing worse. Like, I don't know what it is, the threatened by something absurdity thing that goes on, okay. But people really do get threatened by it. Like, things they don't understand. That's like a very Australian thing. I don't understand that guy. I'm going to hit him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't understand it. Punch him. Like,
what is it, though, that gives you the confidence that the stuff is funny in the face of the, albeit temporary, on that night... In the face of evidence to the contrary, if 400 people are looking at you like, this isn't funny...
Because it's not for them, it's for fucking me. Like, it's mine. Like, I love... Oh, see? That's the comedy gods going, fuck off. That's the... right, a sign just fell off the wall for people at home.
Yeah,
it's for me. Like, I believe... I mean, it's not even like a big... Like, I've got a journey to take or anything like, you know, and I've got to prove this shit... I just enjoy doing it. And I love the combative nature of having an audience confused. Like, it adds a layer of tension to a room that's pretty extraordinary.
But equally, you would rather they were laughing and enjoying it.
I would, but sometimes no. I mean, if they're all on side, it's not going to work.
Because I think that's a really essential part of your makeup, is that combative spirit of... Like, I can't imagine trying stuff out in the way that you're talking about... And having people, like if I try like a stupid one-liner twice and it doesn't work, even if I think it's funny.
I'll stick with it.
Yeah.
Yeah,
okay.
Like for a whole month.
Yeah.
And just weed them out. Like, and the thing is, I mean, I get good, like, I get a good amount of people to my shows. Like, I do back in Australia a lot, and over here it's good. And I think that a lot of people just sit there the first time they see me really confused, but they'll come back.
Yeah.
Not all of them, but maybe 40% of the people who didn't think they enjoyed it will come back because they think they've got a secret. They're like, you've got to see this weird guy. They come back the next year and they bring their friends who get more confused. Then they come back.
And is that...
Because I know it's funny. I know it's funny at the end of the day. And I think they do as well. They just don't realise it then.
And is that... Is that, just staying with the audience for a moment, is that something you've discovered since being weird and recognising people coming back, or recognising that people come back, or is it something that you always knew would be the case? Because that seems, again, an incredibly confident position to go, this'll work, I'm going to keep doing it, they'll come back.
Well, no, I don't just go out there with one, like, really shitty idea and then just stick to it for a month. I do change stuff, but there are certain things that are just for me. Like,
sure.
But I mean,
the whole job, the whole style, the whole thing, because you've, like, you're not like anyone else. Because the nearest you could say is someone like, for example, you know, Paul Foote's absurdity.
Yeah.
But you're nothing like Paul Foote or Noel Fielding's kind of random surreal stuff. You're nothing like that. So given that I feel like you've almost invented a genre and gone, there we go, this is my territory.
Well, no. Like,
who are you nicking it from?
Well, no. I mean, it just sounds so wanky to go.
Do it.
No, well, it kind of comes naturally. Like, I think it's just being brought up with a weird single mum. Like, she's amazing, but she is like a funniest woman, bitter, just hot. Like, sounds like a horrible woman. Wonderful woman, love her dearly, but like, just got this like kind of amazingly bitter, acerbic kind of. Can I tell you a mum story?
Of course.
Mum would like just lay in bed like reading Danielle Steele novels. And she'd be like, Samuel! Microwave mother a lamb chop. And I'd be like, all right. So, and there'd be like individually wrapped lamb chops in the freezer door, and I'd like put them onto a saucer and microwave them for a minute with a bit of HP sauce. And she'd be, thank you, Samuel. It was just a very, it was a weird
house. How old
are
you at the time of this story?
6 to 12.
Okay.
Always looking after mum, but she's a wonderful woman, like hilarious. Anyway, but look, it's just a very, look, single mother relationships can be pretty extraordinary. I guess like mum had me quite late. So when I was a young fella, mum was going through menopause when I was going through puberty. So there was a lot of like hormones in the household. So it was like rabid. Like it was a really, really weird environment to be brought up in. Does that make sense? She's like a jazz singer, and she almost had a massive career, and it kind of like dived down. And it was just, it's just a strange way to be brought up. Like it wasn't a normal upbringing. I didn't realise this until I was about 14. I looked at other people and went, oh, right. There was so much time spent alone. A lot of that time was spent in front of the television watching certain things that I think completely impregnated
what sort of things are we talking about?
The goodies, like which I know you guys aren't really across. Yeah. I know it's British, but it's not really a thing that was... It was kind of on in the 70s, the late 70s, but not really again. Is that right?
Yeah, right. So it remained kind of cultish.
In Australia, it was on non-stop. From 1980 to 1995, every single night at 5:30 on the ABC, which is our BBC. So I watched The Goodies, like repeat episodes, non-stop as a child. That's all I watched. That and Danger Mouse and what was the other one? Basil Fawlty.
Fawlty Towers.
Yeah. So that was kind of like the stuff that kind of, I think...
And was it what was it about The Goodies that attracted you? What sort of elements of it?
Well, it was on. And it's just that kind of like not having anybody at home because mum had to do like several jobs and stuff. It's just like it was just constantly on. So that stuff just went in there. And I met Graham Garden. I worked with him in Australia. And it was like a real like, it's probably because we're two weird looking pedo guys. But
just for the benefit of the insane listener, let's change the punctuation of that sentence to weird pedo looking guys rather than weird looking pedo guys.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, right.
Yeah. So... So let's just talk about the young you then, just for a bit longer. You're so were you quite a lonesome kid if you're sort of sat in front of the TV the whole time?
We moved around a lot. Mum used to like I'm really good at I'm really good at home skills stuff. My wife wouldn't even really know this, but I'm actually very good at this stuff, like handyman stuff. As a young man, like we used to like just renovate houses and then move into the next one. Are you bored? You're all right. We used to like just renovate houses, and so we did a lot of moving around. So there wasn't a lot of like close childhood friendship kind of things.
Sure.
It was just all my mum's weird older friends, like Thor, the big handyman who used to like teach me how to drill and paint and stuff like that. He was in our life. He ran over Popsy, our dog. But anyway,
at this moment, I've got to say we're all taking this at face value. This is extraordinary, part of me is sort of going. Nah, he's making this up.
No, not at all.
But this is, that's a really unusual environment.
Yeah, we just moved around a lot, so there wasn't a lot of... and it wasn't even like, you know, that kind of thing where people say, oh, I had to entertain to make friends. I didn't even do that. Like, I was just kind of pretty lonely. Then when I was 12 to 14, I was at the same school, made mates, then realised, yeah, my childhood's a bit weird. Not in a sad way, but, like, you know, things are not
just
normal
unusual,
in this relationship. And, made those friendships there with a very, very fucking funny guy called Stuart as well, Stuart Peaver. And I still think he's the funniest man in the world. So he's my childhood friend, and we used to just be weird together.
Okay.
It was our thing. It was called being weak. It was just like being weird around the school. People didn't get it like this.
I should have said before we started the preamble that I said to you downstairs earlier on, there's a point about, and it's almost exactly 20 minutes in, where comedians that I'm interviewing start to freak out that they're in front of an audience and not necessarily, like, performing or, you know. So don't worry that they're looking
bored.
No,
they're not there at all. I'm good. They're good.
Cool.
So this is Sam. He's just brilliant. He's really... powerful on stage. And I suppose, I not knowing him that well, I'd kind of bumped into him once or twice beforehand. I suppose I was a little bit scared that he'd be quite a sort of forceful, full-on kind of a guy. But nothing could be further from the truth. He's a really lovely, twinkly man. And he was very open and considered with his responses. So I really appreciate that. I hope you're enjoying this episode. We'll talk more about Sam's absolutely enthralling insistence that stuff is funny, and the kind of the confidence, I guess, that motivates him, and from which we could all probably learn a thing or two. Other brilliant stuff that I've seen this week includes Matt Ewins in his show The $6 Million Ewins, which is just barking mad, and you won't see anything else like it. Some brilliant video in there, some really kind of hi-fi, lo-fi at the same time sort of video and gags, and it's just all sort of... It's a bit clowning as well. I've absolutely no idea how to describe Ewins. I'll get him on the show before long. So homework, if you're at the Fringe, is to go and see the $6 million Ewins. Do not miss Joseph Morpurgo's show, Odessa. I don't see how he can possibly be overlooked for a nomination this year. It is the most imaginative piece of comedy I think I've ever seen. I was going to say it's terrifying. The show itself isn't terrifying, although elements of it are quite frightening to now come to think of it. But it is just, it's bewildering. Like, he's almost, and I would never say this, I don't mean this at all negatively, but he shouldn't be doing hours of comedy at the Edinburgh Fringe. He should be directing 3-hour-long movies. He's just got this incredible imagination. So don't miss that. I mean, I know I'm banging on about it, but that the middle, I don't want to spoil a single thing about it. I wouldn't mention a word, but there's a section in the middle of the show involving beat poetry, which it doesn't do it justice, but I'm sort of trying to say that in code so I don't give away anything about it. But if you've seen it, you'll know the bit I mean. I felt like my brain was leaking out of my ears. Hannah Gadsby, absolutely brilliant. Trying to track her down for the pod as well. Doing a show called The Exhibitionists, which is a sort of an analysis of portraiture and selfies and historical portraiture and media portraiture, and that is just fascinating and wonderful. And Eleanor Tiernan as well has been one of my other favourites. She is doing some quite brilliant stand-up. Her show is called Help the Frigid, and that is on at the Counting House. So check out those ones if you are going to spend any time at the Fringe or if you're already here. Thank you for donating £2. Those of you that did, I've made that as some sort of loose semi-comment last time, and a lot of you went for it. I really appreciate it. It's been invaluable moral support in the tougher little corners of the Fringe here and there, to occasionally have a little £2 donation pop up on my phone from you guys. You can keep doing that if you like. If you go to comedianscomedian.com and click on the PayPal button, you can chuck me £2, which buys me... I mean, I'm not really drinking this festival, so let's say that buys me an apple ties. I'm not accepting advertising money from those guys at the moment, but I'm happy to. Bubbles in apple juice, great idea. So that buys me, you know, half a pint. That's a little pat on the back. I really appreciate that. If you would like to donate more, please don't let me stop you. And you can buy tickets, of course, online from pay-what-you-want.info or by clicking on the link or Google or searching Goldsmith Podcast at heroesoffringe.com. You can buy advance £5 tickets for the next shows, which are going to be this Sunday, Monday, Tuesday and Wednesday, with Phil Kay, Bridget Christie, Josie Long. And I almost have this one booked now, and it's someone very, very good. So there's a couple of people I'm talking to, and I'm sure one of them will eventually get back to me and say yes, they can do it. So either of those options will be very, very exciting indeed. Do come and see Extra Life, 7 o'clock every night at the Pleasance Courtyard. It's my day off on Wednesday, and as you can hear from my voice, I'm very much looking forward to that. So come and see that show as well. It's been lovely to have so many pod fans come and see the show and hang around afterwards and say hi. So thank you for all of that. I think that's everything I need to say. Let's get stuck back into the wonderful Sam Simmons. Take us through how you decided to do your first bit of performative comedy. Did you perform at all when you were a teenager?
I always wanted to be a singer in a band, so I was always in like really shit bands. I was in a band called the Extremely Large Gorilla Men. I was in the Fragrant Thumbs, and it was an awesome insignia. It was a thumbs up with a daisy head on the top, just like, okay. Fragrant Thumbs, and we were terrible. And
Were you motivating this, or was it like, was that groups of friends or you and your mate?
No, I really wanted it. Like, yeah. there's an Australian punk band. They're huge. They're called the Hard-Ons, and they're all over. Do you know the Hard-Ons? Oh, Bob does. Of course he does. I auditioned to be the lead singer of the Hard-Ons, and it was like, yeah, I totally didn't get it, but it was such an extraordinary day, like going in and meeting Blackie and Ray, and anyway, so I was really, really wanted to do this, like that's what I wanted to do heaps, and I wasn't very good at it, but I wasn't like striving to find anything or any meaning, because I was just stoned like constantly from 14 to 27, like, and it has affected me, I can't touch it. Like whatsoever anymore, but it did really it fucked me up a bit. But maybe it kind of like made things better with the weird shit.
What sort of effects are we talking about? How do you mean, like, memory loss or depression or what?
You know, internal paranoia, lots of depression, lots of like really horrible dark stuff. But and I was just like I was just working in a bar in St Kilda. St Kilda's kind of like, how do I put it, in a what's a drudgy part of London?
Not sure about drudgy.
Like sexy.
Like
red light district. Like, kind of, Soho, because Soho's posh, but do you know what I mean?
Like a sort of cheapy Soho bit.
Yeah, okay. Just like hookers working on the corner, and really, like, it was really extreme. Like, I used to work in this place called Greasy Joe's, which is kind of like an American style place, and I used to open up the restaurant, and I got to know all the prostitutes and trannies that would come in, and they'd be ordering a bowl of porridge first thing in the morning, and be like, fuck, really? It's been a hard night, porridge. But it was like it was a really, really weird place to work. So I guess there were ideas swirling around then. And then the reason why it all started was my mate Alison Bicknell got her handbag stolen at the pub. How Australian was that? Alison Bicknell got her handbag stolen.
people in the future will use that as a learning tape to get the exit.
Yeah, so she got her handbag stolen, so we decided to put on a benefit gig at the pub to like raise money to replace Alison's handbag. So I got up and I did these parody songs, and they were terrible, and but there was something there, and I really loved it. And I was like, oh, right, I don't have to be serious and pretend I'm a punk. I was just a really shit almost comic-y kind of guy, and it just started from there, and I loved it. And then I started doing rooms and...
So what was your first experience of the circuit when you kind of passed through the membrane of going, oh, hang on, I can do this? And then you see, oh, there's a load of people already doing this. Had you been going to comedy gigs before then?
Nah, not at all. Didn't see any, nothing. And then rocked up at my first stand-up night and did well. It was a musical thing. I had a mullet on with a bird on my shoulder. It was really weird.
And was everyone else doing kind of straight...
Straight stand-up. And it was a really pivotal moment where there was this Australian agent there who was out the back in the green room. It was kind of like a good gig to be on. Mm-hmm. And he came to me and goes, oh, I saw your gig. And I went, oh, yeah? And he's like, you know, you did the thing with the wig and the bird. It was a bit shit. I'm like, oh. And that was my introduction to the comedy world. Yeah. And it continues to be like that. It is. It's a lot of fucking men just, like, swanning around, just, like, you know, flexing their muscles. And, I mean, it's not all negative, but, I mean, fuck, man, some of the green rooms, like, it's just, it's not a world I love to sit in very much. It's not as fun as it seems. Like, really, it's just... Lots of ego.
Do you feel quite apart from the comedy community?
Not really. I've got great comedian friends, but in general, like, it's not... Yeah, I don't feel heaps comfortable in it. I hate riffing. There's nothing worse than just hanging in a room just riffing.
Yeah. I used to live with three comics. We had a no riffing after 11 rule.
Fuck.
It's just tedious otherwise.
It's so
tedious.
Boring, isn't it?
You get the stage where people can't leave the room to go to bed unless they get a laugh to take about. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't... I can't stand it. Like, just, yeah, it's, but there are aspects to that whole comedy world that I just love. I mean, the green rooms around the world are very different. LA green rooms are great. Like, no one hangs out, no one chats. They just do their spot and fuck off, and that's it. I like that. I'm not going to force friendship. I'm an arsehole.
So let's talk about the stuff. Let's talk about writing the. Your first hour, there was certainly the first hour that you brought here was Fail. Was that your first hour or just the first one to travel to the UK?
No, I bought a thing called Problems, which was like an amalgam of things over the years.
Okay.
And that died a miserable death. But it was fun, great
Edinburgh.
Experience. Yeah. I mean, I'd done a few shows before that. I'd done like four solo shows in Melbourne to varying degrees of success. Actually, one went really good. I got nominated for the big award down in Melbourne.
Okay.
And that's when I thought it was good. And then I got lazy. And then I got sad again.
Yeah.
Then I stopped being sad. Then I got good. And now I'm just, I don't know where I am.
No, it's okay. Happy to stay with that.
You know what I mean? Like, it's honest.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll come back to where you are now in a moment. In terms of the, when you say that you brought the stuff, when you brought the problem show and it died a death, was that lack of numbers in the audience, lack of the right sort of people that were getting it? Did you have the kind of bulletproof confidence that you have now that the stuff was funny in the face
of... Well, funny's funny. And it's like, I go back to, he just went away. The one guy who was in the, fuck me, he was the only guy who was in the show and he's already fucked off. Has he gone to the toilet? Mm-hmm. That's all right.
He went downstairs.
Yeah, I mean, funny's funny. At the end of the day, it's funny or it's not. But, I mean, I do get really frustrated when, like, I'll go back to it, when you're fucking dancing around on stage to Kanye West with a coconut. It only goes for 15 seconds. Just deal with it. Like, it's fucking funny. Anyway, I mean, so I will stick to that. I'm stoic in that belief that it's like, this is what it is. But anyway, so when I was doing Problems for the first time, it was just, tiny numbers. And it grew. Like, there were some people who really, really dug it. There was some great reviews in there, but... it just didn't connect in any way. Then the second show I bought failed. That really hit really well, and then it got better and better.
And do you know why that one hit as opposed to Problems? Were there different things about that show? Was there work that you'd done that made it more successful?
There was a massive breakup in there, in between, and a bit of heartbreak and all that shit, which spurs you on. And so there's a little bit of truth in the show, but there wasn't. It was all hidden in all the nonsense. But there was just something a bit more about that show.
An emotional component.
I think so, yeah. And it's got that's that marriage thing of, I guess, because absurdity is really annoying, and it is. Like, people just like yelling out random words. Fuck, just stop it. Like, but when you marry that with something kind of emotional, it kind of, you know what I mean? That's what I felt like I hit with a couple of other shows later on, where it's like, oh, fuck, what? Because I had a finale in a show a couple of years ago called The Precise History of Things. It was called Meanwhile Over Here, where I was smashing... I had an old El Paso taco kit. Do you know what that is?
Yeah.
Right. So I would deconstruct the taco kit by the end of the show, and I'd be taking the different components and getting it wrong. Like, I'd be trying to, eat the sachet of, powder, which is all fake. It was jelly crystals, but anyway. And I was smashing tacos into my bare chest. But it seemed like... it was a really evocative, amazing emotional connection thing to the audience, because I built up this relationship with this taco kit for the hour, because I was talking about in childhood taco night was like really, really important to me, rah, rah, which it was. It was great. It was an exciting night. Anyway, so by the end, I'm getting this taco kit wrong and people were just like, oh, God, I know what you mean. Like, and it's that when you can connect that really absurd shit with something that they think means something, that's good.
So
it's a good moment.
Yeah. So let's talk about what's the intention of that bit? Are you taking some emotion and some physical thing and smashing them together in lots of different ways and seeing which one works? Or are you deciding in advance, okay, tacos, that's a thing when I was a kid, and
the
pain of smashing them? Which way around does it come?
Yeah, it was backwards. So I just got up at a night with a taco kit and then played the theme music from Brokeback Mountain, that really beautiful lilting guitar by Gustavo, I can't remember his name, anyway. And I just pulled apart this taco kit and I just started doing this thing and I was like, gee, it really feels like something's going on here. And I thought, that's an end to a show. So I wrote it backwards from there.
And was that...
and just lied. It was just full of lies.
Go on. How do you mean?
Well, just like, the attachment to tacos and all that type of stuff. Like, really, it's not there. But it seems like it is.
Yeah, okay.
And it's quite manipulative. But and it's not like, oh, I'm going to set out to do this. It just happened by accident. It was a really happy accident, so I just did that.
And that seeming, when you say, oh, it seems like there's something there, is that based on the reaction of the audience or was it based on your emotional reaction when you were doing it? Were you thinking, hang on a minute, this means something, or were you going, wow, this is affecting them?
It was a bit of both. Like, you could tell, because people thought it really meant something.
Okay.
And I was like, yeah. So it, and then I just, wrote the show backwards and it seemed like it meant something. And
okay.
It didn't.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is that, so do you feel then if in a working show, what is it that you want out of an audience? You want them to laugh, you want them to feel stuff? What's your ideal kind of reaction?
I don't know what I want. I don't know. Like, I mean, it's really frustrating having 300 people in a room and there's just really defiant crossed arms and apathy coming back at you because they're getting angry because they don't understand what's fucking going on. And it's just like, just give in. Like, it's going to be like this for a fucking hour. We're 15 minutes in, just deal with it, and you're going to get an amazing show, like you are. Yeah. Like, I know I'm not shit. Yeah. It's going to be an amazing show at the end, not just because you're leaving. Like, at the end, you're going to absolutely love it and go, oh, wow, that was something. So, I don't know what it was, but it was something.
You know you're not shit. Do you ever think, maybe I'm shit?
Oh, fuck yeah. Like, a lot. Like, on a daily basis. Not more often than not on stage, just in general. But, like, I mean, I'll have moments on stage where I'm just like, what are we doing? And I will stop the show and go, what is going on? What is wrong with you? Like, it is. It's weird. It's so frustrating. I don't know what it is that doesn't connect sometimes. And the words would be not funny. But it is. And I know it is, unless I'm just so fucking arrogant that I mean, I think it's funny. And I guess it's for me at the end of the day. But, I mean, and I know people have invested money and they've paid to, like, come along and see a show. But, fuck, I mean, aren't you seeing someone's vision and you're paying for that? I guess, you know, you get what you pay for. Sucked in. Like, just, yeah. I mean, it's what I want to do, you know. I'm just not.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Gonna change it.
So in the example of the show with the tacos, and Meanwhile, as it was called in the UK, when you say you started with that, you found, okay, this is a thing I can work backwards from. And that's sort of
a thing. I just thought it was a great end. And then just wrote something random around it that seemed random. And then you just write stuff. Like people would say, this show I'm doing at the moment is random. It's just not in any way. Every single thing makes sense in it. And that's what I love that writing process of making something like, I want it to be seamless. I don't want you to get to the end and go, nah.
Sure. So is it just a case then of, I mean, I just want to look more closely at this approach of, are you just making hundreds over the writing process? Do you sit down and write the show, or do you write 5 minutes and try that and see if it's funny and then write another five and try that? How does that work?
I start the whole process in Adelaide. Mm-hmm. Adelaide's great. It's going to be even better when it's finished. Anyway. Adelaide's kind of like a... How would I describe it here? You've been?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's it like?
Oh, it's crazy. It's like Edinburgh, but much smaller, much hotter, and the people have got money.
It's a weird place. It's like the serial killer capital of the world. Bob Slayer got kicked out of there for being weird, being too weird. But I'll start the show there. I'll workshop trial shows in the top of a pub in Sydney. Okay. So I'll do that.
But you'll workshop the entire show?
The entire show, and then just change huge chunks. I got here and spent so much time changing stuff in the first week. Like, my wife can testify to this, that I was like up. I would wake up at like 5 o'clock in the morning after going to bed at 2 and just go, oh, you're shit at comedy. And then just like get up and start writing and trying to change things. So, I mean, it never stops. I mean, I think Kitson said something about like your show never ends until the very last night, like the writing process and all that type of stuff. And yeah, I mean, I still constantly change stuff all the way through. So it starts in Adelaide, it starts in a pub in Sydney, moves all the way through to here.
And how long have you worked on that show before the first performance in a pub in Sydney? Or in a pub in Adelaide?
Oh, you know, a good month or so. Yeah.
Okay.
Just writing it.
And how are you start? What are your starting points when you go, like, in the example of the tacos bit?
An end. Needing a finale. Like, this year I wanted to do a show this year about... I wanted to come out of the closet as a horse. So I've seen a lot of like coming out shows. I was like, wouldn't it be good if I came out as a horse? Like, because it's kind of powerful. Like, I really, you know, I knew I was a horse on the inside, and then at the end I come out as a horse. So that was my end. Was a latex hoof.
Yeah.
I'm giving away the end of the show.
Yeah.
But anyway, it was a latex hoof. I'm like, fuck yeah, just stoically standing there going hoof with a hoof.
Yeah.
And then I wrote it backwards.
Yeah. So, but when you're writing, but no.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. I mean, I've seen it.
I know what you mean.
I don't. I know what you mean in terms of finding an end and writing backwards, but how do you add the other things? What is the process by which things occur to you to go, maybe that'd work, maybe the windsurf, you know, how do you get from hoofs to windsurfing?
Windsurfing makes me laugh. Okay. I was like, windsurfers are weird. That would be a good thing.
And
horses. All right, how do I get that to work? All right, coconuts. Oh, you can split a coconut down the middle and you can make those horse hooves. You know, the... Yeah, is that a thing?
Yeah,
right. So I thought, well, okay, you're lost at sea. Coconuts might wash up. This seems like really tenuous links, but it's not. It's brilliant. Anyway, so all this type of stuff comes together and, like, you cobble it together. Like, the other night I realised that I've got this bit about a jellyfish and then I realised that fucking horses' hooves are in gelatin. Do you know that? Like, back in the old... Look at him.
You just ruined jelly forever for that
guy. Yeah, but jelly was originally made of horses' hooves. I'm like, fuck, that's in the show already. I'm talking about jellyfish. And I eat a jellyfish and it's a psychotic jelly... what do you call it?
Psychedelic
jellyfish. Yeah. And I was like, fuck, it's made of horses' hooves. Genius.
So what's the difference then between the fish monkey teeth shouting stuff out and shouting stuff out and finding links between it? Is it the same stuff that you're... Is it, you know, is horses and windsurfing, is that as random as going, you know, fish, monkey,
teeth? Yeah, totally, but you've got to believe what's being said. I mean, I'd hate to think I'm one of those annoying absurdists, but maybe I am. Like, there are certain audience and certain people who just won't go for it, but, I mean, I don't think it's that tenuous.
Sure, no, I don't think you are, but what's the difference in your head between that stuff and the stuff that annoys you?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, it's easy to see really bad absurdism. Like, there's nothing... It's more annoying than bad stand-up.
Mm. So you're... On the subject of stand-up, just one of the elements of the show at the moment, you talk about turning people into sausages.
Yeah.
You've got that routine about turning the elderly into sausages.
Yeah.
And that, I sort of watching that, I kind of went, wow, this is sort of almost stand-up. A straight stand-up.
Yeah, totally. It's it's about thoughts of cannibalism, which, you know, if you're on the high seas dying, you'd think about eating your arm. And I have an internal dialogue talking about how maybe we should turn old people into sausages and people sure. go, oh, I don't feel good about this. But it is. It's kind of like stand-up.
So is that a bit that you sat down and wrote at 2 a.m. when you went, right, I've got an idea and I'm just going to expand
on it
and just
see where it goes? That was one of the pieces that was always in there. And okay. It's probably one of the bits that really puts the audience offside.
Yeah.
And it's about 15 minutes in that there's a definite feeling of we don't like this. Mm-hmm. But fuck it, I'm leaving it in because, like, it makes complete sense. I was inspired also by that, you know, that the guy that fell off the mountain, broke both of his knees into his leg. Ooh. What's it called? The documentary? Touching the Void.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Those moments of death that guy went through, like coming close to death and hearing that Boney M song like over and over again, I was like, fuck, that's funny. Anyway, so I was like taking real things, like taking the absolute reality of being swept out to sea and thinking you're going to fucking eat yourself, you're going to talk to yourself, you're going to go slowly mad. So grounding it in that complete reality. So I was like, well, fuck, cannibalism stays. That's staying in there. And I know that it dives the show, but I'm not getting rid of it.
So you compared this show to the first hour you did. What changes have you made in terms of the process and the performance of the stuff that you do? Is this a show you could have made then? Or
no. Well, just more narrative and a lot more. I work in audio a lot, so there's a lot of VO and voiceovers and music and all that type of stuff, which I just love. You know, mate, puts textures in the show and and also in a cheaty way, I can remember what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, absolutely.
I get really confused on stage. I mean, the moments I've tried stand up, it's quite scattery. I mean, I love doing something like, do you guys know set list? Yeah. I love doing set list because it's just complete freedom. It's like it's a comedy enema. Like, for people who don't know what it is, it's improvised, like, topics.
They give you topics flashed up on a screen behind
you.
Love
doing
it
so much. There's no filter whatsoever, and it's I think it kind of it sorts the funny bones from the not funny bones, which is really interesting about that show, because there's a lot of structured stand-up stuff, and it's like beat, 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 there's the joke. I was like, fuck, I've heard this 100 times before, and it just, with something like that, you can just see like a brain kind of racing, and it's wonderful. But anyway, what was it?
I was talking about the difference the difference between your stuff now and what it was then and how it's developed.
Yeah, I think I was a lot more rambling, no links, no stitching together, no kind of, which I think is seamless stuff, and it just comes down to writing. I mean, I will challenge an audience at the end of every show I've done it. Like, you come and talk to me and you point out anything that's random in there and I'll tell you why it's there, and it's not. And I never used to have that kind of... ability.
But it's interesting that you would, because I remember the show I saw, like you said, every show, you challenge the audience to... You challenge the audience to... And you say that you can prove everything makes sense. I mean, if you have confidence that everything makes sense, why would you need to challenge the audience?
Because it's a frustration of, like, oh, well, this is really shit. It's a frustration of having an apathetic audience sometimes. Mm. That's it. I mean... And it is a whingy complaint I've got about Friday, Saturday nights, and I'm not going to get all bloody uppity about it. Like, I'm better than the people on a Friday, because I'm not. Like, sure. They've paid money, and funny's funny. They're just not, like,
but you're saying
to
every
it.
Time.
But I'm frustrated. Well, it's not every time. Some nights I won't. That's not every single time. But I will get frustrated if they're not. I mean, for fuck's sake, again, I'm trying to open a coconut, like, to Kanye West, and I'm banging it. It's really it's funny, isn't it? It's 15 seconds long, but you just feel the audience go, fuck off. It's just that kind of like, fuck off, I'm here to talk about things I like. Fucking talk, speak, good more, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, do you know what I mean? It's just like, I know what the pressure is on a Friday, Saturday night. You paid your money, this better be. And it's, look, they'll get a flyer that's covered in fucking 5 stars and award nominations. Mm-hmm. And in their head, I feel really bad. Like, they're like, well, if it's got all this, it's got to be the funniest thing in the world. And then you can tell 15 minutes in after I'm talking about eating nanas, they're like, oh, no.
Has that actually got harder now that you're critically lauded to that extent?
My midweeks are great. My tonight was fantastic. Just sometimes it gets hard. I mean, it just shouldn't be hard, though. It should just connect in a way. But I've still got leaps and bounds. I'm nowhere near... where I want to be yet. I'll get better and better. It's just, I'll get there, yeah.
So I'm going to, if it's okay with you, I'm going to ask people, I'll give an opportunity for people to ask you questions, if that's okay. Didn't mention that, sprung on you. I'll give you a moment to come up with questions while you, I've got something else, aren't you? Hold your wish, mate, I've got one. So I was going to say, you said there before we come to the audience, you said there about that's, you know, you're miles away from where you want to be. Do you know what you want to be? Do you know what is that vision of ultimately, if it all worked to a brilliant audience, what would be your ultimate show as you see it at the moment?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, but it's also, you know, what you want to be as an ultimate human. Like, I mean, I don't know whether I want to be doing this forever. Like, really, like, it's great and I love doing it, but I don't know whether it's what I want to do always. I mean, I'm almost like a fully qualified zookeeper. This is true. Don't you love it? I think it's untrue.
I think I knew that. I don't know why.
Yeah, right. So I worked at Melbourne Zoo for 3 years and I had a choice. It's a very true thing that happened. Like I was doing like education at the zoo. I was a ZEP, zoo education person. Anyway, I was a ZEP. ZEP. It doesn't make sense now. Anyway, so I was a ZEP. So I do education. I talk to people in the public about elephants and seals. And then I got to know the keepers, wonderful people, because they're selfless. They just look after animals. And they realised that, you know, I had that kind of thing with animals as well. So I always wanted to do vet science. Mm-hmm. So I got this job at the zoo. This is like right at the peak of my stony years. Just about to get into comedy. Comedy started happening. I was going quite well. I had the opportunity to then fly to Thailand to work with 6 female elephants that were being brought out to Australia. They were going out to the Cocos Islands. This sounds ridiculous. They were going out to the Cocos Islands to be put in quarantine. And I was going to work with them and essentially come back a fully qualified keeper. At the same time, I then had an opportunity to work in radio in Australia on a really big broadcaster
Triple J.
Yeah. So I could join the fucking... I could join the circus or the zoo. And I chose the circus. And I still look back at it because I miss it massively. Like, it was just a very honest thing to be doing, picking up shit in a paddock. Mm. Like, at 6 o'clock in the morning with, like, you know, on a really cold Melbourne morning with steam coming off. It was like, this is real. Mm. And then I'm out on stage, I'm just copping shit from the audience. I'm just like, fuck, this is nothing. This is so fickle. And it is, it's such a fickle pursuit, all this. It's ridiculous. And so, I mean, maybe one day what I'd love to do to evolve that is to marry the two, because I'm passionate about animals and conservation. And I'd love to maybe, and not in a monkey cheese and teeth way, do a show about animals, but I'd love to, like, you know, present documentaries in a very, very fun way that people can connect with, that's not like a... How are you, mate, buddy, Steve Irwin, jumping on animals, all that type of thing, or just like fact, 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 fact. Oh, no, I'm learning. Just make it like really... But do you know what I mean? Like, there's nothing worse than you just watching a documentary, you're like, oh, no. Like, you know, remember you're at school and, like, people have come to the school to talk to you and you'd be like, initially, like, yeah, and then, like, you're like, oh, no, this is education, like, hidden in, like, some type of performance art. I'm learning. Anyway, so, yeah, doing that kind of thing, that's what I'd love to do eventually. I don't think I'd like to be a clown for sale forever. I don't like television spots and all that kind of stuff. Like, I fucking hate it so much. The pressure, and it is, it's like this, it's a management thing, and they'll be listening, and I know that they know that I feel like this as well, but I fucking hate it. Like, it's condense what you do into 3 minutes, get on stage and win. It's so competitive.
I saw your Conan clip.
Yeah, which is a really odd one.
Like, yeah.
And live, when I did that, extraordinary. And when I watched it back, I was like, fuck, that was a wrong choice. Like, I chose something a little bit too obscure, but at the same time, I'm going back to do more there with them, which is great. But, yeah, it's really hard to condense what you do down, and it's probably because it's not funny. It doesn't connect all the time. But that spot live is wonderful, and the energy in that room was extraordinary. And then you watch it back, and it's like, fuck, it looks like I'm performing in a fridge.
Yeah,
like, it was really devoid of anything. But,
and you've made the TV show Problems as well. I've seen some clips of that, not old episodes. But do you feel satisfied in putting the stuff on TV? Do you get the same buzz from making that stuff?
I'd love to, like, I mean, I did a show back in Australia called Problems. It was like a sketch show. It was really anarchic and weird. We were commissioned really, really late in the year. We made it in a month, and we wrote the whole thing, and... Are you just telling me to get out?
Yeah, can you fuck off?
Get out.
No, I'm just discreetly asking Bob if he could waft the back door because I, for one, am melting.
Yeah, just stifling.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wish I had a bit more time to write it, but I'd love that process to be able to write something properly for telly and invest the amount of, like, time and passion into, like, a project that can live forever apart from a show, which is kind of over.
Just another note on the assemblage of the stuff that you do. What sort of stuff do you reject from your shows and why? Because I'm just interested in that kind of collage. When you take this idea, you move backwards from that, you add a lot of stuff that seems random, sense comes out of it. Yeah. What sort of decisions are you making where you'd put a bit in and go, like, can you give us an example of something you've taken out of your current show and why?
Yeah, right. I thought it'd be really good to have pre-organised heckles in the show. Just because it'd be like, you know, past the audience, just like, I don't understand this. So I gave out a group of a bunch of laminated cards, and I only did it for one night. And it worked really well, but I got rid of it because it just changed the show in a different way where a lady would stand up and go, I really enjoyed the subtle themes from that, but I don't understand what's going on. Or, like, you know, this bit's a bit shit. And the audience are like, yeah, we relate because it is. But I got rid of that because, it was really funny, but it didn't fit the flow of the show at all.
Okay. But those...
I mean, I drop heaps of stuff all the time.
Yeah.
Like, and you know, it must be weird for you who came to the show and, like, just thinking, well, fucking hell, like, how shit was the shit you dropped?
And what are the starting points for all of these individual bits? I know there's like the end and you work backwards, but in terms of whether, like, you see a tree fall over and you think, maybe I'll put a tree in the show. I mean, do you have any method of harvesting stuff? What I mean is, do you see what I mean? In terms of the scope of what could be in your performance is anything.
Kind of. I mean, within the realms of what the story is, you know what I mean? Like...
But at the same time, you're presumably not following the specific line of a story to the exclusion of things that appear not to be connected to it. That's a really complicated sentence.
No, it makes sense. I mean, look, is it random for random sake or is it in there for a purpose? I mean, I guess it's like, when you see a faultless stand-up show and then you just, like, see a bit in the middle and you're like, why is that in there? Like, it doesn't relate. It's like, oh, no, that's just a funny bit that you're trying to buoy the audience up, but then you're back into the other story. It's just... I mean, you can put those gems in, but I mean, I choose not to. I mean, I want it to be a singular kind of thing.
And do you have
a... What a wank.
No.
What a wanker.
Nah, it's what we want. It's what they want. Look at them. do you have a method of harvesting those sort of starting points? Like, do you sit in front of a blank page ever and go...
Yeah.
How do I get some
index cards, blue tack on the wall, madman, serial killer, just like doing this, move it there. Solitude, walking, lots of, like, you know, really dark movie scores and a lot of classical music, just like thinking weird things in the supermarket, like, oh, this will be good. And, like, you think in your head, this is going to be the best, and then you do it on stage, and people are like, nah. But things that you love, I will leave in.
Okay.
So there's no, unless it's diabolically shit, I will leave it in if I like it.
Sure. Something that I've, and before I just come to the audience, last thing I wanted to ask on the content is something I've noticed is there seems to be quite a lot of physical suffering in your shows. Like, you do things which are difficult or repetitive or energetic
the
or
audience.
Painful. No, you. Right. No, you. Smashing tacos into yourself really
well,
hard.
That's actually, violent stuff, yeah. I would bleed from that.
Yeah, so I've heard, yeah.
Yeah, right. So I would smash the tacos into my... They're hard shell. I'd smash them into my chest so violently because it's a really passionate bit that I would be bleeding and I'd be like, I'm a fucking taco punk. But it's just like, it's that passion. I mean, it's also that passion that I'll get on stage if people aren't really getting what I'm doing. And it's just like, well, fucking get this. Like, it's just because I love it. It is that physical stuff. Like, I mean, I know physical, I mean, I'm not like a bloody, am I? Am I like a weird, I mean...
Go on.
Do you know what I mean? Like a weird physical comedian. But I guess I do. I move. I move on stage, and it's what I do. Like I like music, and I move to it. It's not even planned. Like I don't think of dance moves. Like I'll just move. I'll grind. I'll do stuff. But it is physical, and it is a bit violent. Mm. I've got a rage.
I heard that when you're doing the tacos bit, if the audience weren't going for it. That's when you'd end up hitting yourself so hard that you'd bleed.
Yeah.
So it
sounds like really fucked up, huh? It's just passion. All it is passion. It's not weird. It's just, you know, it's just belief in something. Like I really would go for it if they didn't. Yeah. And then I'd use Sudocream straight after the show and just lacquer myself.
So let's go to the audience for some questions. You're first, this gentleman over here. So this is about your drawings. Are you still doing that now or have you left it behind? And at what point were you incorporating that into the stage?
All right, gone. They're gone now. I did them early and they went up for a while and then I got someone else drawing them. I started drawing them and I got this amazing artist called Brad Cook back in Australia who he's just got a really bent head. So I wouldn't tell him what to draw sometimes. I would just give him like a few words or a paragraph and I'd just get sometimes like the drawings were terrible. They didn't make sense. Well, they weren't terrible drawings, but they didn't make sense in what I was trying to do. But some of them were just like, Jesus, that's awesome. So I'd use that. It's all kind of like just working with someone. Like I work with the sound guy as well and, yeah, kind of it's collaborative.
So you'd react live to, like you wouldn't see what he'd drawn until you were
on
stage?
No. I'd get them back.
You'd and then write like, around them?
That's not in the show. That's in the show. That's, yeah.
Yeah, so. Okay. So what are the best things about playing a festival as opposed to usual gigs? And that's an interesting point. What are usual gigs for you outside of a festival? Are there any?
No.
Are you don't do circuit work?
No, I do all the alternative rooms over in... I live in Los Angeles now, so yep. I do a lot of those rooms over there, which are... Fuck Americans, man. Like, they're amazing. Like they're great. I thought I'd hate them. They're incredible. Like, they're just so buoyant. Different rooms to play. So, like... they're into it. Like, I will rarely die on a stage over there. Then I get here, got to latitude, death. Like, it was just like, oh, fuck, welcome home. Like, I cannot believe this. And I don't know what it is. Like, is it an anti-Australian thing? Is it anti-Antipodean? Like, I sometimes feel like, yeah, you can beat us at sport, don't be good at art. Like, fucking hell. Like, it really shits me. Like, I really feel it here sometimes. Like, I just don't get it. But doing the fringe is, it's just fucking hard, but I love doing it. And I love fixating on my show because it's the best part. I hate performing, love creating, love writing the show. I love getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning thinking I'm shit and then turning it around within the day and it hopefully works. The performing side of it, I don't enjoy that much.
That's incredible. Yeah, that's very unusual. I mean,
my wife knows that completely. Like, she knows how I feel, like, before and after, just it's that's why. I mean, I probably should move out of it.
Okay,
this is really bad, isn't it?
This is really good.
Because I'm good. I know that I'm good. I am good, but there's something that makes me think. Just you'd probably be happier not.
Yeah,
in a way.
Yeah,
because it is a struggle.
Have you? Is there any other way? Is there a way for you to do that? Could you become a comedy director or a comedy writer and
that's
get
the thing,
people
maybe,
to do your shows?
Maybe completely. Maybe be a reviewer. I was thinking about it today. I was like, "Fuck, I'd be a good reviewer. I would like to do that." Yeah.
Hate stand up. So yeah.
I love good stand up. I fucking hate. Yeah. Anyway.
Go on, who's good stand-up there, just on the subject of stand-up? Because I know my listenership will write in and go...
Do you know who fucking blew, and I know he's the fucking hot hit boy at the moment. Mm. But James Acaster, I saw him in New Zealand, and it fucking blew me away. Couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
It's just so good. Every word is perfect. It was just Hannibal Buress in the States as well. Fuck me, I love him so much. And Dave Quirk, my mate at home, who I know you've had on the podcast. Yeah. Fuck yeah. He's amazing.
Quirk, just Buress and Acaster, all friends of the show.
Yeah, wonderful. I
thought of Acaster earlier on, actually, when you were talking about what happened with Fail, whereby there was absurdity, but with an emotional undercurrent, where something had happened and you're talking about it without letting on that you're talking about it. That's an interesting sort of parallel.
Yeah, totally. They can work really well. If they don't, they don't. But, yeah, I mean, there's many others that I love as well. But, for your meat and veg stand-up, I just, they're brilliant.
So is you on stage holding a windsurf sail talking about dying on stage?
Yeah.
Is that an insurance policy against the show going badly?
I guess it is, but I do it every single night, that bit. And I love that bit because that's one of my favourite bits where it's like, because it's just wordplay, that bit there where it's like I'm crying and my voiceover says to me, "Hey, what's the matter?" And I go, and he goes, "That'll happen when you're dying." And I'll be like, "On stage."
Yeah.
Like it's just a bit of wordplay. It's just fun. But I guess it's an insurance policy, but I mean, I always do it. That's always in there, no matter how it goes.
We'll come to another question in a moment. I just want to just touch back again on rage. You mentioned rage before, and you're obviously on stage. You have a real passion and a drive on stage. Do you think that your work is motivated by anger more than other emotions?
Yeah, a little bit. Like, is
that your wife laughing?
Yeah, it is. It's full on Basil Fawlty. Like, there's nothing funnier than an irate man. Like, I think it's funny as hell. Not like an angry, sad man, but like an irate man. Like, it's just funny and it comes really naturally. I get really pissed off, like, at things in general. Like, I wish I could do stand-up and be that thing that could just, like, go, "I don't like this and this and this," because I'd be really good at it if I could do it, because I get really angry at things. I have an anger in me, and it's a joyous anger. It's not like a really full-on one, but it's like it's Basil Fawlty. Yeah.
Okay.
So I didn't go, "Oh, I'm going to do that." Like,
was going to be my next question about whether or not whether that was a choice or whether it's like you're on stage, something doesn't work, you get angry, they laugh, and you go, "Hang on, I'm onto something."
No, I'm just angry. Yeah, maybe that became like through confusing audiences for years, I got angrier and angrier, then it became a thing.
Yeah. Before we come on to that next question, I just wanted to ask, is there anything your wife would like to add or challenge you on? Because very rarely do we get the experience of having a performer's partner in the audience.
Oh, I'll do that at home later.
Okay, fair news. Hello.
It's been honest, though, hasn't it? I haven't bullshitted, have I?
Shaking her head for
a... Well, she? Fuck. Rosie.
To talk about that, when you were smashing the tacos on your chest,
yeah,
you were saying you were trying to, Sam was trying to create his happiest moment on stage, and he did want the audience to receive.
Well, that's the written part. Like, that's the thing, but it's like where it came from was an accident. Like, I literally, I didn't go, "This is happy," and start doing that.
Sure.
But then I turned it into something where it did seem like it was something.
Yeah. Gotcha. We'll go to another question over there. Yes. When you were prepping for Conan, did the network give you notes? And you're saying no?
No, like they actually said to me, "Go weirder." Like I gave them an initial script that was probably easier to digest, and they went, "No, do your weird stuff." And I was like, "Really?" And they suggested a bit that I do called Pinecone People, which you've got no idea what this is. Whereas basically it was me. It's prop based. Judge me, whatever. And where I dress up different pine cones to be friends. It's really funny. Like, it's really, really good. And basically he said, "Do pine cone people." I'm like, "No. Like, that's just too weird to do." And then I ended up being fucking way too weird. But, they were amazing. That's never happened to me anywhere else, like doing television anywhere. Like, that's extraordinary. How good's that?
That's very cool.
Yeah, fucking oath.
Given a lot of notes and had to restructure.
structure stuff for censorship purposes. And all I can think of, what did they tell you?
Yeah.
So, like, what you do is so out there. Anyway.
Yeah, no, look, they were... No, they were completely cool with it. I mean, it was a couple of other people that didn't really like it, but yeah, they were fantastic. They're big supporters. Like, they came along, the Conan writers came along to the shows, and that's kind of how I got a bit of a break over there. Like, they just came and saw me doing my weird hour, and they were like, just get him on, just let him do what he does, which is great. I mean, if they can cultivate that kind of weird shit, that's awesome.
And what's the advantage to you? What are the primary positive qualities of living in LA? I mean, you mentioned the stand-ups and the green rooms and things like that.
American audiences, yeah. Fantastic. Really just positive people. Like, I mean, it's just Australians are pretty, like, sorry, but we're pretty nasty. Like, and we've got it's bad over there at the moment. We've got a bad government in. And so I know you guys have, all down there. What's happening up here? What is it, right or left up here?
What's happening? Yeah, it's kind of sliding right, yeah.
Okay.
It's right and it's sliding right.
Yeah, it's heading toward Australian territory. But also we're... Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether we're the nicest people in the world, really. I don't know. I love being an Australian, but when I got to the States, it was just extraordinary. Like, it took me quite a few months to kind of understand what was going on. It's like I broke in a sandwich shop, finally hit me. It was like, I'm super chipper, happy to see you. And I'd be like, oh, for fuck's sake, what is wrong with you people? I'm just getting a sandwich. And then you're like, oh, no, you are like this. You are nice. And yeah. I know there's guns, there's all this fucked up shit there, but I've never met so many positive people. Like, when I'm in Australia, it's just like, yeah, you're fucking weird, mate. Got here, or got to the UK, and it'd be like, no, we do weird. And then I got to the States, they're like, oh my God, you're so weird, let's do something. Like, that's the mentality, and that's how it changes. That's why I love being over there. It really feels like I can do stuff there, and probably... It's great, like they'll bloody massage you and lubricate you into just fucking doing what you want. They will, they're amazing, and that's the thing. There's, I mean, even that editing thing, like with Conan, like, fuck me, like maybe it's to my detriment, but yeah, I adore it.
But they fully supported you, the Conan guys, and were just like,
Totally. Everything I've done over there, I mean, I made a pilot for Animal Planet. And it's my dream job, and it was like have we got time to talk about this really quick?
Sure, man, yeah.
Oh, I won't bore you, it's a fun story. Me and a guy called Dave Quirk, who we mentioned before, we made a series for Animal Planet, and it was called Men Are Animals. And it was about me looking for my favourite weird animals. So it wasn't about lions, tigers, giraffes, rah, rah, rah. It's about armadillos, tapirs, narwhals, all that type of shit. So we did armadillos in Albuquerque. Dave comes over and it's like, it's a fake reality show, but it's reality. So we had to like fake the reality to make the reality show. Does that make sense? I said to them, look, at Animal Planet, I said, look, I want to make it like The Trip, you know, the Steve Coogan, Rob Brydon thing. And they're like, yeah, we love The Trip. They didn't see The Trip. Anyway, so like, they got this edit back and they're like, no, which is where I felt the force of where they want to push you into doing something different. It wasn't their fault. They wanted like another kind of Steve Irwin-y kind of thing. Yeah. They didn't get that. They got a really weird thing. They re-edited it and it was just... ridiculous. It was like this crunchy guitar going, dun, 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 dun. Men are animals. This is Sam. He's a comedian. This is Dave. He loves skateboarding. They love animals. It was just like the weirdest show with us doing these weird fake like animal interaction things. It was just shit. But I've got the material. I've got it all. I've got the, and I'm going to re-edit it because it's fun. It's really, really fun. But I understood why they didn't get that because I wanted this. They wanted that and just went right down the middle. It missed it. So, you know, that's what happens. But they were great. They were great about it. We got to make it.
This lady thought Problems, the TV show, was the best thing she'd ever seen.
Oh, yeah, that's awesome.
Would you do it again?
I'd love to, but the ABC, and like I get this at home as well, they were just like, the nanas don't like it, like the older audience. So they didn't let us come back. And then, fuck, some amazing stuff's come of it. Like it's screened over here and... You know, it went well here on like a smaller network. It was Dave, but it like people loved it, and yeah, I mean, I don't think we'll go back to doing it again. And Claudia's off doing stuff. It just won't happen again. I would love to do it again. I love doing it so much, but yeah, the powers that be just thought it was too weird, and it wasn't. It had a heart. It's a real shame that show got fucked. It was good. Should look at it.
There's no. I was trying to find it on YouTube. There's tiny clips, but there's...
Yeah, we're going to release it on Funny or Die.
Oh, okay,
so it'll be on there. Yeah,
cool. I often ask comics, what's your advice for newer comics? I know there's lots of new comics listening to this. Obviously, you have much more specific tastes in stand-up than someone who would be like a regular stand-up? You know, like you said, beat, laugh, unpack, or whatever. But what advice would you give to people who are trying to pursue a similarly iconoclastic path to yours?
Make mistakes. That's it. Just make mistakes. Just get out there and do it. Just make lots of mistakes. Just continue to make them. And don't care. Don't fixate. There's nothing worse than people like looking at comedy like it's some business regime kind of thing. Like, I see so many young comics coming up, like, and it's not like, oh, no, here comes another young one, but, like, 16-year-olds. And it's like, really? How do you know? Like, go get your heart broken. Fucking, like, do a job, then do comedy. Like, I mean, yeah. That's telling people how to live their lives. But, I mean, I think just do it. Don't try too hard. Don't take it seriously. The less I care, the better it goes. That's what I've learned. I used to really fixate on stuff, but the less I care, the better it is. And I mean, like, personally.
Sure.
Does that make sense? That sounds like it's really against
everything
I've said.
The less you're invested in it having to succeed,
yeah,
the better
totally,
it is.
Totally. But I'm lucky enough to be in a position where it's good enough where it's my job. And I'm so fuck all that stuff. Just make mistakes.
Thanks, man.
No worries.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sam Simmons.
Thank you.
So that was Sam. Thanks to him for coming along and bringing his wife, as you heard there. It was very lovely to have an act wife or, you know, long-term partner in the audience who could we could go to for a little bit of checking as to whether or not they had as to whether my guest had been entirely honest. That was a nice little move there. I was quite proud of that. So thank you to everyone that came. Thanks, everyone, for coming to the show. Thanks to Bob Slayer and Misbehave. They're both doing their own shows up there. Please go and see those at Bob and Misbehave's bookshop on Holyrood Road. Thank you as well to my tech, James Peggs Lowy. Yeah, my good old Edinburgh tech. He was back with me. And Nathan Wood co-produced this episode. That's all I've got to say at the moment. Thank you very much for listening. I'm going to go and see a load more shows. And I'm going to try and rehydrate and get back on it. I'll speak to you soon. Bye.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.